Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the political middle and have on the political right, sitting in for Senator Dan McKay, our state auditor, John Dougal. Hi,
hey,
John.
Always great to be with you.
We're so glad to have you. And on the political left, Shireen Gorbani.
Hello and hey to the listeners. Thanks for tuning in.
We are in studio and so much to talk about. And we're going to go first to Taiwan. And we have our president, President Biden, at a news conference in Tokyo. And you know, President Biden does a lot of things well and some things he struggles on. Every once in a while, he says something that his team has to walk back. And his most recent...
Every once in a while?
Yeah, his most recent gaffe was really talking about China and Taiwan. And he basically said, John, that we agree with the one China policy, which I...
Historically, we've said we understand it.
Yeah.
Not
so
that we agree
with
it,
one.
But we understand it.
And Shireen, that's the way you understand it as well.
Yeah.
Both the right and left see this the same, that he's stepped a little far out there.
Yeah. I mean, this is a situation that is obviously quite tense, mm-hmm. and one word makes a big difference. And so to suggest that we understand, right, suggests that we get that their position is that China includes Taiwan and is one.
And Hong Kong as well.
And Hong Kong. Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we understand that. But yeah, he used the word agree. I know you've got some thoughts on this, John.
Oh, no. I think it's horrible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One, I don't agree with it. I don't think we agree with it in the U.S. So mm-hmm. for him to say agree, this is one of those things when you're going on these kind of visits, you know you're going to get asked this question.
Yeah.
He gets asked this question all the time. You know you're going to get asked.
Right.
And for him to be so... ill-prepared from my perspective. I mean, there's one thing off the cuff, you're not expecting a question.
It's like going to Israel and being asked about the West Bank.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's... So,
so you get those dynamics, and then, you know, the dynamic of what are we going to do when it comes to defending Taiwan?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's going down that hole as well.
Right. So the question is, would we defend Taiwan if it were attacked by China? And he said, yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And do you disagree with that, John?
No, I think we should, but the dynamic is, historically, we've said more, we'll send weapons and things like we're doing in Ukraine, not we're going to send troops.
Mm-hmm.
And in essence, he was saying, we're sending troops there.
Yeah, and so if I understand this right, and I love foreign policy circles because they use the term strategic ambiguity.
It's a good one.
Leave it to our foreign policy folks to basically...
I think we need strategic clarity right now, but yeah, strategic ambiguity is the term they use.
Leave us wiggle room. We've got other news that's interesting, and let's go to monkeypox. Shireen, I remember being in this studio with you. It was in January, of 2020, and we brought up coronavirus, and I thought we were giving it too much airtime because it was just so early.
Yeah.
And
Oops.
I know. But we were prescient. We did it right. But the World Health Organization's documented 120 confirmed or suspected cases. We've had two in Utah.
Yeah, I don't know that they're confirmed. I think they're suspected. But by the time people hear this, that may have changed.
What would our listeners be interested in? Do you know much about it, Shireen?
Yeah. So what I know is that there are a couple things I think to consider. One is that this is a skin-to-skin contact. So this is past skin-to-skin contact. So
shaking hands.
I'm not sure how long it has to be, but okay. I know that it is that we're talking about sores and that contact, skin-to-skin is the way that it is transmitted, which is something we didn't know about COVID. As mm-hmm. you remember when I'm thinking back
totally
now.
Confused.
Totally confused.
10 minutes
about
of washing
spread.
Our hands and everything else.
Yeah, and we also know that it's actually spreading pretty quickly. And so there's heightened alert and concern around this. I would just recommend that people, basically be careful, keep to yourself, watch the news and watch for announcements from your local health department.
Yeah. And that the fatality rate, less than 1%.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. While we're still talking about public health issues, I was in a meeting this week where the head of Intermountain Healthcare, Dr. Mark Harrison, explained to the group, this was the World Trade Center Utah meeting, that COVID had moved from a pandemic to he called it a personal health issue. So mm-hmm. from a public health issue to a personal health issue, John. And I thought that was an artful way to kind of describe it, where you're managing it on a personal level rather than us doing it on a community level. Quick reaction.
I think he's accurate there. I mean, clearly we have moved significantly past that. People are largely living their lives, other things like that. I did go to a nursing home the last 2 days. I put on a mask there just courtesy of the folks that are there, just given the number of people I see publicly. Largely people are just living their life. And they may get symptoms, and it's more like a cold these days. And yeah. It just kind of is what it is.
Yeah. And yet the cases are on the rise again. And it looks like we're going to go through another bump here. But yeah. We are better at treating it.
Yeah.
And
yeah, we have more interventions and we know more about masking, for example. Like, I'm guessing that you used a high quality mask, right? We didn't necessarily have full access to that in the beginning, or even, you know, some people struggle to get them. My understanding is that they are still available through county health departments. If you're looking for high quality masks, you can still get them. If you haven't been boosted, I would, you know, invite you to consider please doing that. Yeah, we're on the rise again here.
Yeah, yeah. Another issue that's really interesting, getting a lot of attention. We talked about it last week, but the news keeps developing. This is on the shortage of baby formula. We had a U.S. plane that flew in some baby formula from Germany. I'd love to be the mother of that pilot just to think that I had contributed in some way. Shireen, what color commentary would you share on this issue? And then let's go to John.
Well, I know John has a lot to say about this, so I'm interested to hear. But I will say, you know, the thing
pointless stunt.
The thing I would say is that as I continue to kind of reflect on this and think about it, I made some notes for myself, because we talk a lot here about, you know, the desire for free market. We talk a lot here about, I think generally on the right, I hear a lot about deregulation. I hear about kind of these issues that really have collided here to produce a plant that had dirty machinery that produced bad formula that killed kids. And so when we're thinking about things in the context of deregulation, or what it means to really control, you know, what's happening inside of companies and to hold them accountable, there's a vision of this that I think is important to consider. But I'm interested to hear what John's got to say about it. Tell me about the wonders of the free market, John.
There you go. Well, I'll tell you about the wonders of government and how it destroys the free market. So let's start there. First of all, about half the babies get formula through the WIC program, okay?
Women, infants, and children.
Women, infants, and children, run by the Department of Agriculture at the federal level. And what they've done is basically given a monopoly in each state. And so Abbott Labs controls over 40% of the market, and something like 48% of the 50 states in terms of exclusivity to supply the WIC program. So you've got the government putting its thumbs on the scale in favor of one company. So
too much market power.
Too much market power. And then what you have in the grocery stores is, because they have market power in WIC for half the market, then they expand out to even more when it comes to non-WIC purchases. Mm-hmm. You have a factory which nobody has indicated that the contamination has actually come from the factory to those infants that died. Mm-hmm. And so you've got the whistleblower that said there were contamination there in the fall. They didn't start investigating, the federal government, until December, shut down the plant in February. We're now in May. We've got the government, which, if it really was that pressing, you would have thought they would have jumped on it much quicker.
Yeah.
Clearly they haven't. And so you've got all sorts of problems. And then you've got these, you know, limitations on tariffs, restricting the market of what can come here, you know, totally skewing. So there is no free market when it comes to this.
Yeah. But what about Abbott returning lots of profits back to their shareholders? How do you feel about that?
Well, so you're saying the federal government has driven a monopoly for Abbott to their benefit of their shareholders? I mean, I would come back to let them compete in a free market and let things figure that out, rather than the government favoring to such an extent one specific company.
And I think we need to have clear regulations that make this equipment and this food safe. And now we are in a total crisis where actual families are really suffering.
Yeah. And that rests on primarily the federal government and what it has done over the years.
John,
this is a bipartisan issue. This is not Republican and Democrat. This is bipartisan in
D.C. I'm going to agree with you on this one, and it's too much government for me. Hey, I don't know how to make a transition. This is very upsetting, sobering, awful news, but we got the news this week of this awful elementary school shooting in Texas. 14 children killed, a teacher, the suspect, a grandmother, 17 people in all.
So far.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Shireen, I think you and I are quite aligned here in the sense that our country, our communities need to do more.
Yeah. 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 And there is something fundamentally wrong with us.
Mm-hmm.
This is not happening in other places. I have to say, I'm kind of beyond emotion at this point and just fall into rage. But I certainly hugged my little guy pretty hard before I left the house. I'm completely disgusted and exhausted that there is nothing that we seem to be able to do on this issue.
John, after Sandy Hook in Newtown, Connecticut was a similar tragedy, I remember the NRA almost immediately came out, and basically their response was, we needed armed, you know, security at every school. That did not make sense to me. Because I think the root cause is so much deeper than that. You know, I just don't want to make our schools military zones.
Yeah. And I think part of the dynamic they say is, you know, the way to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. But I think it's a whole lot more complex than just that kind of dynamic.
Guns are too available.
Yeah.
Well, you go through and you step back and ask yourself, why are individuals engaging in this type of behavior that is so destructive, not just to themselves, but to their communities, the society, and so forth? What is going on in terms of their mental health, in terms of their rage, in terms of whatever it is that's driving them? And I won't pretend to know what that is, but you look and step back and say, okay, what do we do as society? If we, you know, we've passed all sorts of various laws across the nation, which have done little to nothing to really temper this. I mean, places that have really tight gun control laws, the individual in Buffalo still was able to purchase a gun despite his troubled past and stuff. You know, we've tried to do some things here in Utah in terms of mental health treatment, in terms of the ability to turn in guns temporarily when you're concerned about a family member, other things like that, trying to deal with some of these things. Mm-hmm. But it's a very complex and difficult issue.
We're running out of time in the first segment, but I love the model that was set up by the base realignment committees for military. And that was, you know, Republicans and Democrats said, okay, we're going to put the right people in a room, give them a charge, and whatever they agree to, we're going to vote for and support. It's thumbs up or thumbs down. That's sort of the BRAC commission thing. Yeah. But that's what I would love to see on some of these really difficult issues is I think you can get five responsible Republicans, five responsible Democrats to come up with some good solutions. And then we have to agree that we're going to make it happen.
And I, you know, I understand the desire to kind of wonder what's happening at the individual level, but this isn't the individual level. I mean, this is a sickness that we have, and it is unlike other countries. And the way that we enact gun violence in this, I mean, over and over and over again, truly, it's, I looked at the numbers to the end of April, there were over 200 mass shootings already in this country. There is, I need to hear, you know, you'll tell me this and that regulation don't work. What is going to work? We need to have
a, that's why I want to impanel common sense people to figure it out and agree before they impanel that we're going to support them.
Yep. Yeah, I want that.
But I think some live in the fantasy land, which is, okay, we'll just get rid of guns and then we won't have this problem. And that's not reality. And I hear that way too often, especially in various folks in D.C.
Okay.
And it's not reality.
Right. And I just have to say, I'm sitting here as a gun owner. I'm actually a gun winner. I won it at the Utah Association, the County Association.
Oh, man.
I'm telling
you. I'm a
gun
buyer.
Yeah, not
you
me.
Know,
I
have
there
to buy
are
mine.
No guns in my house.
And I will tell you that I need to start hearing solutions from the right, because all I hear is deflection to every other issue. We have to get something done on this.
And I would suggest in Utah, on the Republican Party, we have been driving various approaches, various solutions to try and be...
Don't have red flag law? Like, we have so much struggle to get the basics done here.
A red flag law? Red flag law doesn't work. It's got so many other problems, but the ability to voluntarily turn in weapons and then get them back when you feel safe or when your family feels safe, we've passed that law in Utah. So we've taken various steps.
Let's leave it at that, and there'll be more discussion in our next segment. We're going to talk about free mass transit in the state. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal, still on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. We want to talk about the Title 42 border policy. So this is, I don't know how to describe this, but what
it's,
I...
It's go ahead, if there's John. A communicable disease in a foreign country and it poses a threat to America, the Surgeon General, in conjunction with the president, can restrict people's access to the country.
Yeah.
At the border.
So Donald Trump was trying to keep this in place and was supportive of it. Biden agreed to lift it this week, but a federal judge came in and prevented him from lifting it. I think this is so convenient for the Democrats because this was not going to play well in the polls. I'm smiling at John, but you're agreeing with me.
Yeah, so I think if we're now living in a state where COVID is a personal health issue, then this, so that aside, this is a, I think this is a cruel and unnecessary law, but I also think it's convenient for two parties, frankly, that seem unwilling and unable, speaking of things that we're unable to do, to make meaningful immigration reform and to deal with, you know, the problems that are creating this crisis at our border and beyond, right?
Yeah.
Like what's happening in countries that produces this.
John, from a policy perspective, I think this is an easy issue. Like we don't need to lift Title 42. We need to reform our immigration laws.
The law is
reasonably
good. It's how it's applied. And stuff. And if you're concerned, right now it's easy enough to test people at the border and then figure out whether or not you have the communicable disease, COVID or whatever it might be. But it, from my perspective, was applied, you know, egregiously, excessively. Maybe in the early parts of the pandemic it made sense, but we've gotten to the point where, okay, it's just being abused as an immigration tool. And our immigration system is so utterly broken. And this is also one of those bipartisan issues.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Republicans and Democrats, neither side really want to fix the immigration issue.
And
they like to raise money and get votes because of what they're doing to fix it. But
and
they
leave
don't
families
really
to suffer.
It's one of the most important things we can do to help our economy.
Especially those looking for asylum.
Couldn't agree more on both of those things.
Yeah, and so we're heading into these choppy economic waters with rising interest rates, high inflation, volatile stock market. Something we control is our immigration policy. We could fix that, and it would help us get through these choppy waters.
Yeah.
Hey, let's go to some polls. This is the poll by the Deseret News Hinckley Institute. They've asked a lot of interesting questions. Let's stay, since I was just talking about the economy, they basically had 87% of their poll participants said they had recession concerns.
Yeah.
87%.
I saw an overwhelming majority of CEOs that were polled also have the same concern.
Yeah.
That we're going to be entering a recession.
Uh-huh. I keep telling people there's this Hobson's choice. You've heard me probably say it before, but is the recession going to be short and mild, or is it going to be long and serious?
Yeah.
And so, of course, we want the former of those two.
We want short and mild.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, or none, yeah. But the Hobson's choice is you.
You heard Natalie asking for a recession.
Yes.
Well, the same poll. John, let's go to you first on this one, but really interesting. So they asked... are you a Trump Republican or a Romney Republican? Which do you prefer? And that was of all Utahns. And of all Utahns, 51% were Romney Republicans, 37% Trump. I was like, yeah, that's the Utah I know. But when they asked just Republicans, 51% Trump, 42% Romney. Your reaction?
So that's interesting. I haven't seen those poll numbers, but it's interesting. Trump would likely be higher in many other states, and while many Republicans agree with various of his policies, his mannerism was still so contrary to how Utahns want to approach government and society and everything else like that. I'm not surprised by some of those dynamics, but there is a lot of discontent as well when it comes to Romney, when it comes to the Republican Party, that too much he's selling out and wanting to partner with the Democrats in things that are selling Utah short, and so. It's kind of interesting. I would suggest that when they draw it as just those two, there's probably more flavors and angles to the Republican Party in Utah than just those
just
two.
Just those two. You know, when people ask me, what kind of Republican are you, Natalie, I always say, oh, I'm a Bangor Republican. I'm a Leavitt Republican. I'm a Walker. I can do Huntsman, Herbert, Cox. I think our governors have been terrific, but I can't handle Donald Trump. So I would definitely be on the Romney side here.
Yeah. You know, what I think is interesting about this,
what
John,
kind of Republican are you?
Well, I mentioned in the break, I feel like I could be, there are a couple pieces of the Dougal Republican platform I could sign up for, but not certainly the whole thing.
And you want to be Democrats for Dougal? Is that what you want to be?
No, I don't. But thanks for the offer. What I can tell you is I'm interested in this kind of idea that, like, Trump, it doesn't sit with Utah very well. I have to say, I'm disturbed by the amount of kind of let's go Brandon signs that I see around when I just get right out of Salt Lake City, you know, and I think that there's an embrace for that kind of brashness. And I think there's an embrace for the attitude that Trump brought into politics in this state that is oddly appealing, considering how people, I think, kind of generally are more in that kind of Romney camp. So
well, and
it's distressing.
I like character
in
people. And you know, Mitt Romney passes the character test for me, and Donald Trump does not.
Does not, yeah.
I thought you were going to say character in terms of TV antics and other things like that.
Yeah, so, which
you
know, I got you.
Donald Trump,
I was a little surprised where you're going,
John,
with that. So,
free mass transit. Governor Cox is basically saying, hey, this will help with high gas prices. And I really like the policy because we've had some experiment with it and we've seen that usage goes up when mass transit's free or public transit's free. I also love how it targets people who, you know, maybe are lower income, can use transit to get around, are affected by the higher gas prices. So I love that it's targeted. I think Mike Schultz is an amazing guy. I really appreciate his leadership. But he's been critical that free mass transit only benefits a handful of people. And my point is that is the point. It's targeted.
Wow.
And by giving a tax cut to everybody, I would see that as inflationary at this point.
So I got to say, in terms of a piece of legislation that would only target a handful of people, I'm remembering very clearly an anti-trans bill that was passed that targeted one person in this state. So I can't honestly believe that things that have small impact or just target a few people are not the business of the Utah legislature. They've proven that it is.
Yeah. I would suggest that was... The argument is protecting 35,000 young women in sports.
Do you know how many people? Okay, completely not. And we have a huge opportunity to get more people into mass transit. And I was very proud of our governor to move forward with that. And it would be excellent for our air quality. It's good for the economy. It's good for a targeted population, as Natalie's suggesting. I'm all in on this.
I'm going to say this is just pointless. I mean, the simple fact is even coming out of the pandemic with free February, it only went up 16% from the previous month. To 106,000 riders. Okay, at its peak, UTA back in 2015 was 162,000 riders on average per day. Mm-hmm. So we're down significantly from then, and we're offering it for free. And you talk about targeting. Okay, what you're going to do is you're going to target folks that are paying sales tax, which falls on the poor disproportionately, who typically can't ride transit because it's not convenient for their schedules, to give some break to a wealthy attorney in Salt Lake that wants to ride the train in. I think you're targeting the wrong folks.
I'm a Murray resident, and Murray Central's quite close to my home. I ride tracks quite a bit. I'm telling you, it's targeting socioeconomically disadvantaged people from what I see on tracks.
That's been my experience, too.
But Utah struggles. We don't have the mass to go with the transit, and so we spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if you want to start talking, when it comes to the cost per passenger mile on the roads, it's 30 cents per mile, of which 3% is paid by the public.
Yeah.
You get up to $1.41 per passenger mile for transit. Okay, that's more than 4.5 times more expensive.
But can you imagine if we really figured out ways to be, especially as new growth is coming in, thinking about all of the opportunities that we have with the prison site, everything else, there are so many things that we could be doing to better design our cities to allow for mass transit to be the primary or the preferred choice. And I would love for us to be really doubling down on whatever we can to get people out of their cars.
Well, I'm a champion of preserving the corridor. So when we have the mass, we build the transit to go with it. But too often we're spending decades in advance and we're wasting a bunch of money.
Let's chat for a minute about what's happening in the next couple of weeks. So we're going to get the Roe v. Wade opinion. We're going to start having the debates for the primary elections, and we're going to have the primary elections in this state. I think it's a period the next few weeks of a bit of unrest, Shireen.
Yeah, sounds right. I think we talked about some are calling it the summer of rage. Mm-hmm. I'm there. I invite others to join me. But I would say that there are small things that you can be doing in your community, right? We think a lot about how partisanship has taken over, but you can overcome it by talking to people who have different political ideologies.
Stay at the table.
Stay at the table. I'm trying to do that here. I typically appreciate it. And I just want to say,
me backed in the corner over here.
That's right. In light of the recent news that we were just talking about with shootings and different things, there are lots of ways that you can engage in community care. And one of those ways is by donating blood. Into the summer season, we have more people that need blood. And so please, contact AROP, go down there and give blood. There are many ways that you can create a more loving society. And I hope that we're working on that.
John, are you hearing any news on Capitol Hill about the what's going to happen with primary debates, Utah Debate Commission versus the party?
Is
Mike Lee going to debate the
I don't know.
Challengers?
I haven't heard a lot of dynamics. I know there was some jockeying back and forth. I haven't heard anything in the last week.
Yeah, interesting. Do you buy the Summer of Rage?
I do have fear. I mean, I hear a lot of people that are agitated. I hear people talking about the Summer of Rage. I look back to 2020. I don't think that Summer of Rage was good for Salt Lake as well as across the nation. And I hope we don't go down that path.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there are good ways to express your anger and concern without my fear, getting into violence.
Yeah. And I just want to point back to that. I think, you know, when we're talking about that, we're talking about mobilizing, we're talking about marching, we're talking about doing the work that needs to be done to protect people's reproductive freedom. Not talking about like what we're seeing on this nation, which is a massive explosion in violence perpetuated by white supremacists. Though we did see some on the left as well, it pales in comparisons to the numbers that we're seeing from violent white ideology in this country.
Yeah. In the less than a minute we have left, start with John, go to you, Shireen. What should people be doing to make the summer better? Let's end on a positive note.
One, go outside.
It's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Enjoy the weather. Be with your friends. Be with your families. Celebrate that we're not in 2020 with the pandemic raging like it was.
Live music again.
Yeah. Yep. Love it. Yeah. Hug your kiddos. Tell people you love them. Call your mom. Do all those things.
and look for somebody who needs help.
Yeah.
Reach out and help somebody that's having a hard time.
If you've been seeing the banners, one small act of kindness.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we need to do. Well, it's been a great discussion. I've really enjoyed it with my friends Shireen Gourbani on the left, John Dougal on the right. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.